know the right from the wrong when I'm gone. You will find me singing on this song when I'm gone. So I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here.
This is your campus events calendar for Monday, September 26th. There will be auditions for the play Dangerous Liaisons by Christopher Hampton tonight from 4 to 6 p.m. and from 7 to 9 p.m. in Lincoln Hall, room 327. Auditions are open to all people, experienced or otherwise. And kicking off the Salvador Allende Hugo Chavez Progressive Fall Film Festival, Werner Herzog's epic Aguirre, The Wrath of God, will be screened tonight in the Multicultural Center located in Smith Hall, room 228. The event begins at 5:30 p.m. And also from 5:30 to 7:30, in the small gym of the Stott Center, there will be open badminton. And that will conclude our events calendar for KPSU Campus, Monday, September 26th.
What's up, Portland, PSU? We got a new chess club going on Mondays, 12:30 to 2:30 in the Smith Center. It'll either be in room 229 or room 329. You should come check it out. Jack, get it? All right.
Attention, young ladies. Attention, young ladies. Woo-hoo!
Guess who's back? Back again.
The Goa Constrictors.
Back. Tell a friend. Bring.
Fabulous Radio, every Monday night from 10 to 11 p.m., where we bring you the finest in psytrance, Finnish techno, Australian disco, and whatever floats my boat. It'll always be fabulous, and it's always Monday night from 10 to 11. With your host, the Goa Constrictor.
Hi, you're listening to Art Star Radio. This is the show where we talk about art here at KPSU. My name is Ava, and I have with me today Scott Wayne Indiana. And he's also going to be the DJ for the next hour and then tell us about the music. So I'm just going to play one tune, and then we're going to be right back. So please stay tuned to R-Star Radio. Very nice. Now, you're listening to Art Star. My name is Ava Lake. My guest today is Scott Wayne, Indiana, and you've got a connection with that band, right?
Yeah, definitely. They're three really good friends of mine, Ryan, St. Thomas, and even though he's not a very good pool player, he's a pretty good bass player, and then Mike and Bevan, and they asked me to do the painting for their CD. It's coming out in November, and so I'm pretty excited about that.
Right. Well, we're looking at the CD, and it's got one of your paintings front and back. And, you know, by the way, if you can go online, you can go to 39forks.com. And when you get to that, you're going to see a bunch of forks. But they all have different places that you can click and get information. And I think it is the second fork on the top that will give you images. Yes?
Yeah, exactly.
Give you paintings. And so you can actually see the paintings that are on the cover of this CD, which are, well, what would you call them? Describe how you made them in the process and, you know, what's in your mind when you make these paintings?
Well, first of all, I want to say that this is a really big pink microphone. And I'm not sure if I feel comfortable, but I'm going to try talking into it. But I like it, kind of. How do I make these? Well, basically, I think about them for a really long time beforehand and then get the materials together that I really like using.
Okay.
And kind of let the accidents happen and then choose which accidents I like the best. Because I think the more I consciously try and do things, the more I mess things up.
It's not for you then. I mean, like, consciously having to figure something out, it just doesn't work as well as when you sort of let go.
Right, exactly. I get in the way of my own sort of what I'm really going for, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I'm trying too hard, and it's probably the story of my life, actually.
What's the materials? What are we talking about here? I'm thinking ink and paint on paper, but is it more than that?
Well, I like to use shellac a lot from Home Depot. Amber and clear, and a lot of polyurethane. And then charcoal and lots of black paint. And then kind of just throw those together on kind of as many canvases as I can build. And then choose the ones I like and scrap the ones I don't.
Yes. So it's pretty quick?
Yeah, I think so. But, I mean, like I said, I don't know. I don't want to sound pretentious and say I think about these things nonstop, you know, and then they come together.
But often we are artists all 24/7, you know.
Yeah.
It's just the moment of art may be very short, but there's a long launching pad.
That's how I feel about it. I feel like I'm sort of sleeping on things and constantly thinking about it. And then right when that moment happens, when it's time to make the painting, either the magic happens or it doesn't. So.
Right. So, well, I guess one thing I want to just find out is why did you get to those? Okay, first of all, would you say you're an abstract expressionist if you had to? What's if you had to describe the paintings in purely a visual thing, you know, what would you say they looked like?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a good descriptor, and I'm not really one to shy away from labels. You know, like most people don't want to be labeled, and I think that's, you know, I think it's, I don't know, we have this language and every word sticks everything into the labels and you either are in one or you're not. And I don't know if that's where I want to be, but that's definitely what these paintings are. And a lot of the other things I'm hoping to do in the future are away from this sort of painting style, you know, artistically speaking.
Right.
Yeah.
But sometimes, you know, we have to go, we just have to do that.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I really like these paintings, and other people seem to enjoy them, you know, to a small degree anyway, and that's something that drives me. I mean, I like them, so why should I stop making them, I guess?
Well, let me ask you now, the color palette, does that have to do with the materiality, the shellac, or are you specifically drawn to these earth tones with the black?
Yeah, I think I like the tones, the colors themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried throwing some other colors in on this palette, and like some blue and other types of things.
And this right here?
Yeah.
Okay.
And
how'd you feel about it?
Yeah, I like that one. I like it, but it's just, it seems more contrived, not contrived, but just, I don't know, it doesn't feel as natural to me.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's part of what I'm going for, is kind of a kind of a, like I said, the subconscious kind of natural aspect taking over. And
okay, so that's what I was going to get to, is what were your aims? You're saying the subconscious. So you're kind of looking for an inner state of mind. I mean, what are these expressing?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly my question, too. And, you know, if I could write that out in words, then I would underneath the art.
Yes.
But I feel like...
Well, you're kind of working towards that with your blog, which we'll get to more, but you are kind of working it out with words too, yes?
Yeah, I think so, but I mean, I think that, you know, it's an obvious statement to say that the human language, any language, is extremely limiting, and I think that with music or with art or any other form of expression that is not utilizing language, there are these more, like, continuity elements that are there. That's not the right word to use, but in terms of the shades between angry and you know, outraged, okay, or something, mm-hmm, art can do an infinite number of things in between those two words, mm-hmm, that language can't.
Yeah.
And so I feel like you know, I could say that this painting is about being angry or something, but mm-hmm, I think that there's also huge numbers of degrees going on in these paintings or any piece of art that are unspeakable.
Unspeakable.
We can talk about them, but...
Right?
Yeah, I don't know.
This is interesting because, you know, this got to an email exchange that you and I once had where you said, well, how do you know that you're getting something across? Because, okay, you're saying there is the degree between being angry and the degrees between being angry and outraged and, oh, man, you know, there's an infinite amount.
Yeah.
But how do we know, even with art, that we're getting that across? I mean, how do we really know? I know that you and I had both kind of, like, gone back and forth about it a little bit. Like, we wanted to be sure, but then did we need to be sure?
Oh,
was there ever a certainty that people were getting what we were trying to express?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's why certain forms of art become popular, possibly, because...
They're understood?
Yeah, I mean, because huge numbers of people are tapping into what's being expressed, and they relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
So you go to a rock concert, and everybody's... screaming. I mean, there's an element of fame there and idolatry or whatever that goes along with it. But, you know, really, how do you know what's getting across is getting across, what I'm trying to get across,
mm-hmm,
is what you're asking?
Yeah, I guess, because you're definitely coming from some deep place, putting this stuff out there, and then you say people like it, and I'm not saying that they don't, but do they all get it? And the degrees between, like, angry and outraged, sometimes I'm so surprised what people think my own art's about.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, whoa, you know, that's just not on my mind. Yet I have no control over that.
Yeah. And I don't know. I think that that's part of the beauty of art, you know. And I think, honestly, that is an element of the human experience, mm-hmm, that is missing, is sort of that open-ended... way of interpreting the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we wake up in the morning, everything we come in contact with all day long, we are constantly rewarding ourselves that we understand what it is, you know?
Yes.
And we never approach an object, whether it's art or anything, and are comfortable with not knowing what it is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or trying to do something other than run it through these patterns in our mind, you know, and think about, oh, what could that be that I've never thought about before?
Mm-hmm.
And people are constantly... upset about not knowing what something is in front of them. And I mean, that's just in our genetics, in our survival instincts, because in the, you know, not too long ago, a couple thousand years ago,
we didn't know a lot.
If you didn't know what something was, it could possibly kill you, you know, because it would, you never know. And so I think that's in our genetics, and I think that that's why a lot of people fear the unknown, because it's so deeply rooted in that survival instinct, you know.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because just recently in the paper, there was an article on Robert Redford, who I'm not like this huge fan of or whatever, right? It was in the Oregonian.
I don't know if I believe that, but...
Well, there was an article? No, I'm not a huge fan.
You don't like Robert Redford?
Well, I don't know that I think about him so very much one way or the other, but there was a big quote where he said, people may think that I'm afraid of the unknown, but I'm actually not afraid of the unknown. I like mystery.
Mm-hmm.
I like the fact that there's all this stuff out there that I don't know at all. And he said it may be better than I have right now, but I've always loved mystery.
Yeah.
And
it's hard to be comfortable with, but I think a lot of people who even like mystery, they want to know what it is at the end of the story.
Uh-huh.
You know, they want it wrapped up.
Uh-huh.
And... I think that explains a lot of people's huge beliefs in religion and stuff is their fear of the unknown, you know, rather than being able to accept some new ideas about what spirituality might be. Mm-hmm. People often grasp onto what's, you know, been the tradition over the long time just yes. because it makes them feel comfortable with being alive and the fact that we are all going to die. uh-huh. Which is, you know, we try to ignore that all the time.
Hmm. Well, I just think, well, yes, some of us are trying to ignore that.
Oh, right,
some
yeah.
Some of us are actually really into it.
Indeed, yeah.
But, okay, now, your forms, though, where did they come from? I mean, do they mean specific things to you, I guess? You know, I mean, we can say abstract painting, whatever, but, you know, like the cover.
Mm-hmm.
The cover. What's that mean? There's a big line and there's a square around it and then there's the, I mean, you're a deep thinker. What's that coming from for you? Because, you know, they say form is really the oldest, basic, most universal language. It's mm-hmm. not words or anything. It's like the square, the circle.
Yeah, you've talked about the square a lot.
All that
yeah.
well, and the spiral.
Sure.
It's universal. It's
yeah.
all over the planet. So what does that mean for you?
Well, you know, this might sound like a cheesy answer or something, but I honestly feel like the forms that I'm trying to create anyway are sort of literally kind of expressions or representations of my own soul. And so whether it's like a picture of what my soul looks like at that time or, you know, something I happen to be thinking at the time I create that, I feel like that's a snapshot that's happening there. And that's why I think I like them, because I sort of feel like they're self-portraits in a way, and I can't really speak to, like, the geometrical, you know, shapes that are there, but in terms of the organic aspect of it and...
It's you. It's coming from you.
Yeah, that's what I feel.
That's a beautiful thing.
Thank you.
I think it's an honest answer, because there's actually quite a few artists who say, oh, it has nothing to do with me, and it has to do with this.
Yeah, I never understand that. Who can say that they're trying to take themselves out of their art? And, you know, if you want to try that, that's great. I think that's awesome, but I don't understand why. I mean, yeah. You're trying to make something that's objective, maybe, and that's good, and you're, like, trying to reach out and reach lots of other people.
But it still comes from you.
Yeah, and personally, I feel the best way to be objective and reach out to the most people is to reach the deepest you can into yourself, mm-hmm. where we are all interconnected, mm-hmm. you know, in that way. That's my belief, anyway. And so I think the further you reach into yourself and, you know, I don't want to say your own subjectivity, but your own essence, I think is the closer you're going to get to reaching objectivity.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of weird, and maybe I just now realized that, but that's why we're here.
That's why we're here, that's right. And by the way, this show is archived. So let's say you've missed this show, your friends have missed this show, however, you can tell them to go to kpsu.org, and they can go to schedule and then click on my show, and you'll see that the show, right after this hour, it's already archived, and you can download it, you can burn it. Actually, I haven't figured out how to burn it yet, but I understand that you can do that. But you can definitely listen to it at any hour for, like, a month afterwards, so that's kind of nice. You'll be able to go back and review
yeah.
some of this. Now,
yeah.
you weren't always. You've had several exhibitions that have happened the last couple of years. Most of them at Everett Station's Loft, but they haven't all been painting shows, have they? Seems like you made collages or objects or something.
Yeah,
I
had
doing?
One that I made collages or object stuff mm-hmm. when I really started like a sort of a love affair with Marcel Duchamp.
Mm-hmm.
And basically realized that, you know, I wanted to jump off of whatever he was doing a long time ago. And, I, you know, I think thousands of people are doing that already, but that was where I was at, and this is a year ago or whatever. And, you know, I don't think many of those pieces were very successful, but I really enjoyed making them.
Uh-huh.
And I think aesthetically they were okay,
mm-hmm.
but...
Well, we have to grow up in public as artists. It's hard.
Yeah.
You know?
Conceptually, I look back now and I kind of, you know, cringe a little bit. But it's all part of the development.
It's like I said, you have to, you know, I can look back on just some shows I had a few years ago, and I've been showing a long time, and I'll go, oh.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just not what I would do now.
You know, maybe that's a good thing, because if you look back and thought everything you did
was great
for the last 20 years was amazing, then maybe you wouldn't have grown at all.
That could be.
Yeah,
that could be. So you did object art, and you did different kinds of things, but then you got to painting.
Well, I had been painting all along.
You've been painting
I'm sort of constantly wanting to make this departure from painting into sort of more of a conceptual world or an installation type world, or
like
especially
painting can't be conceptual?
Well, it can be, definitely, but I mean, what I'm really trying to get into is kind of a collaborative conceptual deal, you know, where involving a bunch of people.
Okay.
And I don't want it to be performance so much, but
you got something in your head.
Yeah, yeah, like the horse thing. Maybe we'll talk about that in a little while. I'm excited about that.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, I'm just, you know, wanted to understand about that because I think that all the great paintings are conceptual. I think all the great paintings are.
Yeah.
And it was actually David Hockney that turned me on to that, but he's right, you know.
Yeah.
I do not grant great ideas to those who, you know, don't make anything.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that like any other sort of abstract concept, whether it's being expressed through painting or, you know, words are abstract concepts or language. Where am I going? Oh, yeah, these are all conceptual sort of tools in the works, you know? And so anytime you have some sort of abstract visual thing going on, you know,
there's something behind it.
Right. There's going to be in the viewer's mind.
Yes.
There has to be. Unless they're just looking at it as an aesthetic thing or, you know, a visual thing, then they're not really even trying to understand what could be there.
Well, you know, the problem is,
Scott. Maybe not. Not always. Like,
well,
maybe
we had that departure during the 60s, you see, with what's his name? Frank Stella.
Mm-hmm.
What you see is what you see. You know?
And, oh, right.
You know,
that's not.
That's I know, but that's what happened.
Yeah.
And that took us on that detour there, which really made it so that, you know, abstract art kind of went into a terrible corner. Went into a terrible corner that, you know, we're still trying to yank it out of in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, that's a big conversation.
Yeah, well.
I mean, and I don't feel even slightly educated enough to talk about it, but I do think that abstract concepts are what is going to continue to be expressed through art.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to become more and more clear, you know, how to, like, someone who isn't necessarily an art lover, like, the abstract ization is going to become more of a clear picture. And, you know, like people who didn't get cubism or understand it at first.
Now they're all over it.
Right. Now it's let's hang that above the couch. And I mean, not that it's going to become popular in 20 or 30 years. Like it actually is now already, but.
It takes time.
Yeah.
It takes time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even in my family, I know that when I first left representational work for the other, they were like, oh, we like the other better, and that's what they wanted to hang in their house. But just recently, someone in my family said, hey, I'd like one of those.
Yeah.
They finally, and not the ones, not the squares, but my transitional ones, which were abstract, but I'm just saying they're catching up to about 1999.
I think so, it's just becoming comfortable with the unknown.
Yes.
I mean, it takes a long period. There's a dissonance there, and you either sort of open your mind to that and start accepting it and try and, you know, see what's going on there, or else you stick with the,
what you know.
Yeah, supporting the war and the current politics, and, you know, let's not question anything.
Now, you told me off the mic that you were going to have a show coming up soon.
November.
Tell us a little bit about it.
In November, there's going to be this show of paintings which make up the CD packaging,
okay.
The very foundation, and their band, like I said, the CD comes out in November.
Uh-huh.
And so they will all be there, and, you know, try
like
and
first Thursday November type thing?
Yeah, okay. At Ever Station.
Okay.
And it's in the small one on the corner of 6th and Everett. On 6th.
I imagine that, you know, you'll keep people updated. If you go to his site, 39forks.com, he'll probably keep keep us updated on what's going on.
Yeah.
Or if you go to my site, lovelake.org, and you go to my diary, I'll keep you updated. So we're going to just play a song.
I have to say first, I am addicted to your site, by the way. I'm probably your biggest fan, and
really?
I think...
Now tell me what,
I think that
I
might
like
be.
That.
I think that's why you asked me on, because you know I'm your biggest fan, and...
not necessarily true.
I definitely feel honored. And yeah, I'm addicted to your diary. And in fact, we went and saw the Swifts last night.
Yes.
And the Oregonian had that article.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty amazing.
Weren't they incredible?
Yeah. And the hawk came and tried to get them.
Really?
And yeah.
But, see, I didn't see that. I was there last night as well.
Oh, really? Yeah.
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 But I just, you know, in my little corner, whatever. But the hawk, did it get a swift?
I don't think so.
All right.
Yeah,
on.
He missed. Although people were cheering.
They need to eat too, though.
Yeah.
But so listen, you've been listening to Art Star Radio, and I'm just going to play one song. So please stay tuned, and we'll be right back. Thanks for listening. Listening to Art Star Radio, and my name's Ava, and I've been talking with Scott Wayne, Indiana. He's got a website, 39forks.com, that you should be checking out, because we've been talking about his paintings. Oh, and I just wanted to mention what's happening with me in the future, because next week I have Harvest Henderson, who's an artist and a writer. The week after that, I have Jeff Yon, who's going to be hawking his various wares. Then I'll have Paul Middendorf, who is opening a gallery with Paige Saez called Homeland. I think I might even have a couple of the artists that are going to be in that exhibition with him at that time. Then the week after that, I'm not quite sure, but I know on the 31st I have Tom Kramer, who's got, you know, bazillions of shows happening in October. And then sometime in November I have Amy Archer, who is a really interesting photographer and collage artist that shows at Ogden Gallery. I'm a huge fan of her work, and I've only met her once, so that's where I'm at. If you want more information on this show, you go to ArtStar, or you go to lovelake.org, and you'll see ArtStar Radio right there on the homepage, and it'll give you information about the show, who's going to be coming on, and also who's been on, because this is my fourth year now, and I've had over 100 artists on this show.
That's crazy talk.
It wasn't always easy. Yeah. I'll tell you that. So, okay, what I want to do now is I want to backtrack a little bit with you.
Okay, well, first of all, I just want to say real quick that that song was made by a student of mine.
Oh, all right.
Devin Gaffney.
Okay.
And when I knew I was going to be on the show, I asked him to put something together.
Uh-huh.
And he's an amazing kid, and he put that together. And I don't know if the listeners heard, but it had news footage from 9/11 rolling over that little song. And anyway, I really liked it. I thought it was pretty cool.
Student, what do you teach?
I teach math, high school math.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, see, now that's where I wanted to backtrack to. I wanted to, okay, because I think there's got to be, all right, you have degrees in philosophy and math? Or
yeah.
What's the deal?
Yeah, philosophy and math. And then like a master's in teaching that you need to teach high school. Yeah.
Yeah. But in, you teach high school math.
That's what I teach now, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I did today.
What happened to the philosophy? What happens with the philosophy?
Well, you know, you have to go get a master's and a PhD, and then you are a teacher with that, which it would be cool. And that's something I'm thinking about doing.
You told me.
In the future.
You might do it.
Yeah, yeah.
You might do it. Is there something in all of that that satisfies you where art cannot? I'm just curious how these all...
Actually, it's kind of the other way around.
All right.
I think art sort of satisfies me in the ways that those things can't. You know, like I talked about earlier with expressing things that language can't express, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I do love philosophy. I mean, I spent the summer in Powell's poring over books, trying to just get things right. And there's a guy who lives in my building who's a philosophy professor at Reed, and I've keep... begging him to meet me for coffee and tell me about Wittgenstein and, you know, fill me in on the things I'm missing and, you know, because I find that stuff pretty interesting.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow, Wittgenstein, I'm afraid I'm not familiar with.
Yeah, you know, he's a pretty complex guy. I'd give you the quick rundown on his biography and all this stuff, but...
No, it's all right.
Yeah.
This is your hour. This is your hour. But it's just, it was a name that I'm not familiar with.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So math is how you make your living. But there are some similarities, though, aren't there? I mean, aren't there some things that I mean, how would you say that they coincide? How about that? I know nothing about math.
Yeah,
so
well,
I'm entering into a world here that's like, you'd have to tell me. I know nothing about it.
You know, basically, the math I teach is high school algebra and geometry, and I think it's pretty separate for me. I mean, those things to me are things I just do kind of forwards and backwards in my sleep.
Wow.
Well, no, I mean, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that it's just kind of this...
It's crystal clear.
Yeah, yeah, those, and they're the elementary stuff. And the stuff I did to get a math degree was stuff, to be honest, you know, I don't remember most of that. It's the super advanced stuff, and I'd really love to have a firm handle on it and then incorporate that into art. But, the, you know, for example, analysis of calculus, where you're just getting crazy, and further and beyond, you know, that's the kind of thing that I sort of study in my free time a little bit, but I never quite grasp it the way I want to.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, when I'm teaching high school kids, I make little sketches on the board, and I can print them out, and I give them to the kids, and they don't think it's very good art.
Your art.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
No, the stuff that I just sketch out while I'm teaching. You know, I'm like, okay, here's a piece of art. Who wants it? This is a gift to you. My gift to you.
They are not impressed.
And now they're like, yeah, you're not an artist, actually. You don't.
Oh.
Yeah.
So did you show them all the press that you got?
No, I kind of keep that. I kind of keep it separate. And you know, mainly just because. Well, I don't know. I have
you
always
want respect, maybe as the math teacher.
No, I don't know. I kind of feel more like I want to be the weird teacher, the weird guy. But, yeah, I've just kind of kept my personal life separate, mostly, from teaching.
And the art is a personal thing.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel that you were indeed a new romantic when Richard Speer labeled you such?
Who was I alongside there?
Oh, I don't
and
know
I was
about all that.
Against someone else. No, I was, you know, I'm absolutely... completely surprised and flattered if I ever see my name in print and, you know, to be on your show and to get a show. I feel like I have some good things to do and some nice things to show and things, but I'm still surprised when there's any recognition at all for it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my wife would completely laugh at me
for that because she would say I'm like a super arrogant and brash, confident kind of person. And the truth is, deep down, you know, I'm just a shy guy.
Well, you know, there can be one thing about being shy and another about being very confident about what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm like just you blowing
you probably
hot air.
Okay. Because I've met some artists who have really made art for a very long time, but the confidence factor is still not there for whatever reason. Their childhood, heck, I don't know.
Yeah.
And then you can meet someone who's made art for four years, and they're like, oh, the big painter.
Right.
That has a lot to do, but the mindset can set the road for them in a lot of different ways.
Well, I mean, you know, there's something to be said for being a salesman.
Yes.
In this whole little shindig called the art world. And yes. I mean, and it's going to be true anywhere. And anyone who can sell themselves, it doesn't matter what you're doing, you know, you can do it. But there's got to be some substance to it. And I don't want to sort of do that. I got caught up in that after that press came out a little bit. And caught up in that aspect of it. And, you know, I wasn't proud of that. I'm not. And basically, I just want to make some art that has some substance to it.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully some people will like it. I mean, that's all I want to do.
Well, when you say caught up, do you mean believe your own press? Is that what you're saying? Or respond to it? Or, you know?
Yeah, believe in it and feel like, you know, I want to go out and meet all the famous artists in town and get to know them and befriend them and start hanging out with them and everything. And, you know, the truth is I have met a lot of the artists in town and I do enjoy talking to them, I really enjoy that on a level where it's talking about art and talking about philosophy and maybe spirituality and the sort of day to day.
But not
things.
The gossip of who's getting into what gallery.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Or you know what's going to sell even.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Now on your website, well, there's a few things I'd like to discuss. One is you have a project that you're working on right now, and I know you wanted to be able to mention it to the audience, the listeners. Okay, there's one place that you can go click on where there's various projects, right?
Yeah.
And you do collaborative things. You invite people to join. So you could do this, dear listener.
I hope you will.
You could send him, you know, he's got various calls for artists. And like I sent something for a face.
Yeah, yeah.
And I sent something for, I guess, a painting named after a rock song.
Right,
maybe.
Exactly.
So that's a couple ways that you could enter. But you have a horse thing going on? What's happening now?
Yeah, you know, they're all over Portland. There are those little rings on the sidewalks, little metal rings.
Yes.
You must have seen those.
We have one in front of our house.
Yeah. And I've always been fascinated by those ever since I first saw them and learned what they were. And what I've heard that they are is left there from a time when people actually tied their horses to them. Is that what you've
heard?
True. Yeah.
Yes, that is true.
And so I was always, every time I see them, I think about that. And I think about, you know, why are they still here? And in fact, the other day I saw one that was in a new curb.
Mm-hmm.
So they had preserved it. They
Take it off.
I thought maybe they were only in the older curbs or whatever. So the project is to go out and buy a toy horse at Goodwill, a little plastic horse that, you know, 11-year-old girls collect.
Yes.
And I went there the other day and I bought 14 of them and they were a dollar each.
Wow.
They're just all over in the toy section. Yeah. They're just everywhere. And the project is to invite everyone to do this and take the horse to those rings and tie a string around the horse's neck and to the ring, and then leave it there. And so when people come upon that, they, you know, they're hopefully shaken a little bit. They're like, oh, there's the rings that were used for horses, and there's a toy horse there that's pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
And just sort of opening our minds to the various aspects in the city that are there that have been, that are preserved, really, but that we sort of ignore. And I think that's a statement and a comment about the transient nature of our collective consciousness, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We're constantly in motion. And, you know, cars have only been around for, what, 80 years maybe?
Something like that.
I don't know. And the human race is 5 million years old, but we're constantly caught up in the moment. And at the same time, maybe not living in the moment. And now I'm speaking in total cliches. No, but the truth is, I'm excited about this, and I really hope to start seeing
photographs. This is what
you
want.
You take a photo of it, and then email that to me. And I'm really hoping to start seeing toy horses all over Portland tied to these rings. That's my goal.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Interesting. So what are some of the other projects that you've worked on this website, 39forks.com?
There's, well, the truth is, I mean, this is kind of the first one that is moving into a space where I want them all to become. I want them to become something that move from the site into the real world.
Yes.
And maybe even into some sort of exhibition space, into galleries that would be open to that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm excited about that. And I think this is kind of the first one that's going to take it from somebody emailing me a picture and people starting to actually go out into the real world and do things and leave them there as art mm-hmm. pieces. One of the other ones is called Object on Tour.
Okay.
And the idea here is that people find some object in nature. Doesn't matter what it is. It can be a rock or a lighter or whatever. And send that to me in the mail with a map from where they got it.
Oh.
And then what I'll do is return it back to its place where they found it. And document all this with like photos and scans and whatever. But uh-huh. the point is that this little object sort of takes a tour from where it was back to where it, back to its place, you know,
yes.
even though it's not a permanent place, it's sort of, you know, where it was taken from.
Right.
And then documenting that with various photos and stuff. So that was one of the other ones. And I just got one of those in the mail the other day. And I'm pretty excited about that. It's from Central Oregon, this pile of voodoo stuff that someone found in the middle of the desert. So
right.
yeah, I'm excited about that one.
Well, now, speaking of which, you're not from here. Where are you from?
Well, I grew up down in Salem.
Really?
Yeah.
You are from here?
Yeah.
But you had a detour.
Yeah, I lived in Chicago for a year and Austin, Texas for a year and Boston for a year.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, Boston is a... It's a nice city, and it's good to visit, and I was happy to leave it and come back to Portland, though.
Mm-hmm.
So, I really like Portland a lot. It's very comfortable.
Right.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, we're at the quarter hour, and I'm just going to play a short song, and I'll be right back.
Yeah, that one on the left there.
Alrighty.
Thank you.
Yes, and so what were we listening to?
Well, the first one was by my great friend Daniel Hicks, who's in a local band called Cicada Omega. They play around town all the time. They're a lot of fun. They're from Kentucky. And then the second one was by a friend of mine named Jason Baker, mm-hmm. who I've known for a really long time, and he passed away last December, mm-hmm. and he was just an amazing artist and a total inspiration to me. And when he passed away, they found some of these recordings that he had made, and they knew he'd experimented with music a little bit, and some of his friends knew, but that really surprised me. It's really amazing music that he put together.
Right. Well, you know, it's funny. I pushed a couple of buttons around. Now I'm hearing all this strange feedback.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened or what, but anyway, hopefully it's not going over the air. But I hear it in my headphones. Anyway, one thing I wanted to ask you is, so why did you start writing? I mean, why did you start doing the blog? And it's kind of grown, and you know, you have your days when you don't say much, and then you have days when you like really spill your guts. And so tell me a little bit about just how that developed and why did you decide to do it?
Yeah. Well, to be honest, I wish that all of my friends made blogs. And my family, especially my family, who I wish I talked to more. But I know my family checks in on my blog, and it's sort of their way of keeping up with me. Uh-huh. And I don't have that with them, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so I would check in with everyone I know. I would check in with their blog every day if I could and see photos of what they've been doing and that kind of thing. And I've always done a journal since freshman year of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And
you kept them all?
Yeah, I still have them.
Wow.
And basically...
How many notebooks has that been?
That, I'm on like 37 now or
cool.
something like that. Yeah. And the next... Yeah, so it's sort of just transferred over to the website. And, you know, blogs are kind of popular, and I like reading them. Some friends do have them. But I try and put pictures on there like I know you do, too,
mm-hmm.
and not have it be just writing. And so we all like... you know, books with pictures.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I just, I think for those who can write, it just really aids in a lot of things, because as an artist, when you do show, there are people that are going to say, what's this about, or what are you doing here? And you know, you don't owe anybody anything in one way, but if you have been writing, if you have been thinking about it, and if you have been putting it into words, even if those never go out in a blog, they become really helpful later on when you're
yeah.
showing your work.
Yeah.
You know, just sharing your ideas.
Yeah. And I've even found that if I will write something down versus just think about it,
mm-hmm.
that it the answers that I'm sort of seeking will materialize more efficiently, you know mm-hmm. or they'll sort of, you know, rise in front of me. And whether that means some spirit is able to read what I'm writing versus... Mm-hmm. Hear, see what I'm thinking, and so then help me better. I don't know what it would be, or maybe writing it down makes like the process of writing it down helps you to more naturally come to what it is you're trying to find.
Whatever your conclusion is now.
Yeah.
Let me ask you: have you gone back and read them, and then realized, you know, like had major epiphanies, and you know, you've had one long enough for that to now be able to happen.
What do you mean?
Well, okay, I've kept one since.
Have a major epiphany and then look back and be like, that was silly?
So incredibly right, yet you couldn't respond in the right way.
Oh,
I see. You write something when you're like 18
yeah.
or 19, and you think nothing of it at the time. And maybe you can't even really explain it. It's just this little off thing. You're too
mm-hmm.
embarrassed to really say what it's about.
Yeah.
But then later on, when you're 30 or whatever, you look at it, and, you know, part of it's very hard to look at, right?
Mm-hmm.
Except the truth of it. You know, it's like there's some truths that maybe don't go away. And see, this is what I found has been very helpful about keeping writing for so long, is that I could hold on to some original ideas. Because as you get older, sometimes, you know, your life's responsibilities get in the way.
Yeah, you know, I haven't really gone back and looked too much at that old stuff. And when I do... it's sort of to see like the memento memory type things that I've taped in,
mm-hmm.
that, like scrapbook sort of photos or
okay.
things. And maybe that what that's saying is that I'm not really writing anything of substance
not
in the past.
Not necessarily. You haven't maybe just looked into it. It's not that easy, actually.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah, I should look into that a little more, maybe.
Mm-hmm. So there's scrapbook things in there. There's stuff pasted in.
Definitely, yeah. It's a collage journal that I keep.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So the new one that I'm excited to start is going to be in a Liz Taylor's jewelry collection photography of that stuff book.
Nice.
And I'm just going to use a Sharpie and collage stuff and write on the photos and. Normally, it's always been a blank book, you know, but I'm excited to try this out.
Something a little different.
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. You keep them, you store them all in one box? Or
yeah, I've got
what's going on with that?
I've got a crate full of them, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, if we get a tsunami here, that'll be the thing I carry out.
Me too, except as mine's now three huge boxes.
Yeah.
I don't know what I've been, we're thinking about renting or, you know, iron vault or the bank or whatever, yeah. But
on the other hand, I mean, it might be nice if those things all burned or something never were found.
No, actually, I don't think, maybe for others they don't need it because they certainly don't need to make money off my blood.
Yeah,
that's how I look at it.
Well, but you know, they're probably going to scan those all in somewhere and it's going to be a digital thing on your eternal website.
Damn.
Like,
and I can't say that on
and
the
that'll
video.
Be on gravestones, people's gravestones. When you go there to visit them, you can see their entire life documented.
Well, okay, now we're getting towards the end of the hour, so I want to ask you something. I want to ask you about, you're married to a writer and an artist.
Yeah.
Okay, and we're going to wrap up a little bit with her.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
Because I know you want to do a dedications, but let me ask you a little bit about what it's like to be with someone who's a writer and an artist. How's that working out for you?
You know, it's a blessing and it's a curse, and it is for both of us. We totally bounce ideas off of each other, but at the same time, we get frustrated by the, things that go on. I don't know. One thing we did recently was we tried to do an internet search on art couples in history who were famous and at the same time happy and successful and made good work for their whole lives.
Mm-hmm.
And there was like one or two. And everyone in the past who's tried that has just been miserable and argued all the time and, you know, had huge problems.
Who were they? Who did you come up with?
The good ones?
Who did you come up with that was happy?
Well, there was, what's his name? I should have been prepared for this.
Jean Arp and Sophie Tauber Arp.
Yeah.
They were very, very happy.
Awesome.
Yes. I do think, though, that he's incredibly influenced by her art, and she never really got quite the recognition, but they were crazy about each other.
Yeah, right.
So?
There was one other, I can't remember, there's a writer who lived in Tangier, and I'm embarrassed, I can't remember his name, but he and his wife were both writers, and I think they were pretty happy up until they died. And,
but it is tough.
Yeah, generally speaking, I mean, most of our people that we look at as idols or icons, you know, really lived reckless lives and self-destructive lives and generally died early and generally got divorced, you know.
Yes.
And I don't mean to bring that up when you ask me about how it is, because I think that we actually do a pretty good job of working it all out together. And man, I gotta tell you, you know, she's one of the most amazing people I've ever been around, and she's an unbelievable writer, and she's working on a novel right now that's gonna just be awesome, and I can't wait to see it. And
she's gonna be my next guest too.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what she has to say on here.
Yeah, she's gonna be my next guest. So we're getting close to the end.
Okay, great.
I've been speaking with Scott Wayne, Indiana. He's got a website, 39forks.com. You want to check that out. And so you've just got a little dedication for her, yeah?
Yeah, this is off a mix CD that my wife and I gave to our wedding guests.
Nice.
And this is a song that hopefully all the listeners really appreciate. It's by Chris DeBurge from the 80s called Lady in Red.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. And thanks so much, Scott.
Yeah, thank you. I really had a great time.
Yeah.
Shine so bright. I've never never seen so many men ask you if you wanted to dance. Looking for a little romance, given half a chance. I have never seen that dress you're wearing, or the highlights in your hair that catch your eye. I have been blind, lady.
PSU Portland's College Radio at 98.3 FM on the PSU campus and worldwide at kpsu.org.
Support for KPSU comes from MF Magazine. MF features interviews with national and international fashion designers and artists.